start with firstly the issue that was raised on, and just add on development of capacity in the IDT, more specifically the questions from the members that came around the skills pipeline and graduates and so forth. And just give context, whilst we've got the Bursi plan or program as well as the development plan for the candidates, it is all informed by, amongst other, what our the feedback that we're getting from our clients. Clients are more, at this point in time, they are keen to see professionally registered people on their projects. And this has the reason for that is twofold. Firstly, when they sign off an oversight on projects and there's a signature required, our processes in terms of the councils require that the professional signs as well. We have situations where we have projects that the consultants that we appoint are professionals, but our own people not. So you need to cover that gap. And that's a very important thing. So hence the whole initiative to take our current people, the 40-odd, 38-odd that we have, put them through a program to be registered and to become professionals, because it takes about 3 to 4 years from being a candidate to get there. So there's some serious work taking into account in the current, in the IDT as it is. We've got 3 professionally registered construction project managers, inclusive of me, who's actually supposed to be doing the mentoring. However, since we've got the good relationships and with the CBE, we can do that. We can take from their resources and build out on this and even take it further, not only to development of professionals in-house, but also to contractors, which is the next step. So typically, if you have a candidate from within the organization that is limited, which we have currently through the CBE, you can do the same going forward for those 52 contractors that we have on the contractor development plan, because they also need skills in, amongst other, civil engineering and quantity surveying and project management and know how it works. So I'll remain with that one on the first item. Secondly, on the issue of the way forward and possible business, we are very keen to be becoming a powerhouse in facilities management for mainly in three line streams. If you take a typical property, you want it to be funded right from the onset. If it's a greenfields project, you want what Treasury calls life cycle funding, where you develop a new piece of works, and then typically over the life cycle, which is around 20 to 25 years, you want a maintenance plan as well. Yes, we would rather be the institution that would have gone forward in the course that we completed to do the maintenance, because who would know better of what happened in the development of the works than us? But we've got some work to do. I'm already consulting with the DDG in the Department of Construction Management to that effect. There's a huge portfolio in the PNTE for facilities management, and that could make up the shortfall to the 6 billion that we need going forward per annum. So that's the one part. On the planning side, it remains a serious issue, but not one that cannot be overcome. We had meetings, as the CFO referred to, in the past week, and in fact it has been our second meeting, where we've had training at the SOEs through the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer on the new, what is called FIPDM. But if you look at the title of the document, it's actually not FIPDM. It is a framework for infrastructure delivery and procurement management. It's changed slightly, but it's the same thing, which has basically now been implemented as from the 1st of October and taking over from SIPDM. What we produced over the last month is a detailed process to show what the roles and responsibilities are of the parties within the process of delivering infrastructure. The planning part is the critical part, because at this point in time, if you look at the instruction note and where we get fees from, we only at this point in time involve ourselves much after we get the appointment. So what happens is that the early stages of the planning, we're not involved. Yes, it's an oversight. We must do much more with our clients to address that. Because if we do that, we will have line of sight of where this budget is going to. If it, especially if it's a multi-year budget, which is, in the, our case, is mostly the way that projects are implemented and funded. So we have to do that because then we can mainly we can have the management fees as part of the implementation from appointing the consultants and the contractors. But what we addressed to, what we spoke about to the Treasury about is what happens in terms of our involvement before the time, early stages of our implementation, where we don't get fees. It could be a lot of work that we do as professionals within that first part, and you can't get paid for it. So it's an issue that we raised, which they felt was a very, very pertinent issue that must be addressed, and it was agreed that when we meet with Public Works, those issues would come up. So that is the other thing, and amongst other, we were discussing in terms of work. In a number of instances, we get to projects through Public Works, and when we get to analyze the processes and planning going forward, we find we all keep competing with other implementing agents. So in the Eastern Cape, we've gone to two sites in the last past week where we realized that there's involvement of Kuha on the, in the process, and we view that we shouldn't be competing with them, but it's a matter for discussion. That is the other element that I'd like to deal with. The poor planning is also informed by a number of other things. We have found in situations lately in the Northern Cape that as a result of overcommitments in the previous financial years, monies then get paid from a current financial year to deal with problems with the past. So you get a project, many of them sitting in planning, they get to a point where you've appointed consultants and probably in some instances as well contractors, and then the money blows up because it is used for other purposes. We have a huge void in that respect, and that inhibits planning quite severely. With respect to P's and G's and all of those costs, let me just expand on that. When you don't pay a service provider or contract, contractually they can go offside. Once that happens, you've got a serious issue. Because firstly, they will charge you for that time as part of their time-related P's and G's. Secondly, what they will do is they will claim for re-establishment. But the problem is, those materials on site are delivered. It is actually owned already by the client, and we must look after that. They are real risk in terms of those issues, not only with respect to the payments of the consultants and contractors, but of the materials on site getting lost and what goes with that. So again, that is, those are issues that we have to address, and there was a question related to what do we do to mitigate these things amongst others, so that we find that the 40 million that is sitting there could be used for something else. Since I joined the IDT the last 6 months that I've been here, much of my work has been to go after projects that could be failed. That is a lot of work that you have to put in, which takes away from the work that you should be doing in the organization to take it forward strategically. For instance, you have to, there's a project in Fort Knowledge that we have to sit down continually with both the department and the contractor, just to keep them on site. Because if they leave, it's a big project, it's a very far off place, the Northern Cape is huge, you can suffer a lot of consequences. That is amongst other what we're trying to do continually to resolve those issues. Then in terms of our mandate, I think the opportunities are huge. We will have a way forward soon, and the Honourable PM will direct us and invest in that respect. But we are, from what we've heard from our clients, we have good things and bad things as well. We admit there are projects that we've not done well. It's a reality. We can't go away from that, get away from that. But we are also saying that we're doing all to get us back on track. The situation is, unfortunately, that in some instances, like projects in the Eastern Cape, the norm for project management in the industry is about 1 to 8. One project manager to 8, maybe 10 projects, depending on the complexity. In some cases, our project managers have 25 to 28 projects.
So as you lose your skilled technical people as a result of attrition or whatever the reason may be, it really impacts on the ability to service your clients today and in an appropriate way. So those things are things that we must guard at. And as soon as the pipeline from our candidacy program becomes a bigger reality and we improve on that, the more we can feed our skills pipeline with respect to the organization. And then lastly, on the issue of the police station, I will get feedback on that as well as the school honorable member in the Eastern Cape and come back to you. I don't have that information. Thanks very much, Chair.
Yeah.
I will pass it on to you. Just two additions or comments. I think maybe to close the picture that the CFO
highlighted in terms of what the AG said in respect of the board. I think it is
necessary to indicate that as much as the AG has found that the functioning of the board has been adequate.
It is important to reflect on whether we are providing effective leadership. We are too stretched, and it's only the three of us, and yet the relevant section in the trustees allows us to maintain and preserve the assets. But I think that's not enough. We need to be growing the IEC to a different level. That's one thing that I think the TM will speak to in terms of reconstituting the board and how soon that will happen. The other issue, just to close one loop on Navigant, the CFO has touched on Navigant during his talk on litigation. It's also important to note that the three people that were implicated, who the CEO correctly said, they are now part of the IUT. We lost the arbitration discussion, if I call it that, primarily because they represented the organization. So they were found guilty by processes. However, prior to that moment, they were party to presenting a case on behalf of the IDT. So that's the technicality that we had to undo. And that's the basis on which we are challenging that particular award. The last thing, having listened to one of our members raising the issue that the AG presented yesterday, it makes one reflect on whether the qualification was the right audit outcome. Because the presentation that they've given suggests that we do not know what we're doing. Listening to the issues that were raised and the manner in which they were raised, it would suggest that the IBC doesn't know what it's doing. And one can only conclude that probably the team that was presenting is not necessarily the full team that was interacting with us, who would understand many of the other issues that were picked up. I think that's those are my only comments.
Before you come in, dear, Honorable Shwala,
just a thing. Can I say something? Colleagues, we've dealt with issues from this morning, and I just want us to persuade each other that let's not get into a space of challenging each other here on issues of audit. If there are issues that you feel that are not good with the AG, I think IDT, together with the deputy and others, go to AG and challenge those things. Because it will open a floodgate where AG comes to us. And when you come to us and dispute what the AG has said, in my previous life, I know what this means. I will not go into detail. I just want us to put it into sleep and say to you, behind us, go to AG, so that AG doesn't come to us, then we question them, because it will be a cycle that we will not be able to close.
Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. Hoping that we will take that concern raised by Honorable Shabalala. Dear?
Thank you, Chairperson. If let me finish.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Allow me to greet the Honorable members of the committee, as well as the chairpersons and CEOs of our boards that are in attendance today, as well as the support from both the department and the entities, as well as Parliament. Allow me, Chairperson, to start with the elephant in the room, the board. I think that yesterday, Minister dealt with this matter quite adequately in her response in the afternoon, clarifying what the department is doing and where we are in terms of what the department is doing. But allow me, Chair, to indicate that the current institutions, all of them, had been there when the mandate of the department was public works full stop. The mandate of the department has now stretched to include infrastructure, which places the authority on infrastructure squarely on the shoulders of the department. If one checks the legislation that set up the various entities, and some, not even legislation, like IDT.
It was first the trust, kind of to implement transition. Because if you look at when IDT was born, 1990 to date, it was born during that time of transition, where one critical area was identified as the soul of the nation, social infrastructure throughout the country, schools, clinics, hospitals, you name it. And when it was created as the trust, it was given money by government to go and do work, this kind of work, interact with communities. Now, over time, government has reviewed the mandate of IDT to a point where at some point it then was solely a, it moved from being a trust to a scheduled two entity. And therefore, that interfered somehow with the initial mandate, and therefore the initial way of doing things and operating. Because now it became subject of PFMA and. Now, over time, decisions have been taken by both government and IDT that talk to the mandate of IDT to a point of where we are today. Just now you've been asking about not name, this, that and the other, which clearly shows that as the organization, as the years go, the organization grows and the organization tries to fit itself within the environment it operates in. You heard they now have buzzeries, they have this, they have that. As an organization, they are gradually growing as Chairperson, if I can borrow that word, we need to grow, we need to grow IDT to another level. But that has happened within a legislated environment. Now, the mandate of the department, which IDT is an entity of, has changed. I have asked certainly all the entities, and I have asked them to go back and review their operations in the light of the changing environment within which they operate, which is the normality of the department. And the feedback is not as I thought, or I probably anticipated it would be. And that has prompted us to interrogate ourselves as the organization, but also as a department, to say, in the light of this and what the president expects of us. Remember, infrastructure now is more than just concrete. It's that which is going to be used as a catalyst to deal with unemployment. Now, in the light of that, are we poised to meet that obligation? And how shall we be structured? We are engaged as we speak in that process, together with the PFA, because when mandates of departments change, the lead department in terms of dealing with that which must change is public service and administration. And in that process, it does not require even a rocket scientist to realize, when we look at the entities from where we are, you find some duplication in some. If you check their mandate, you find areas that overlap. And that overlapping results in the bleeding of the fiscus. We like it, we don't like it, but it's the fact. Because if, let me just cite one example. If IDT is in the space to provide bursaries to some children, CBE also does that as part of their responsibility. The department also does the same. Are we able to collectively say this is the impact we have had in the skills environment that we operate in? We cannot, because each one is doing in terms of their own regulation, in terms of their way of seeing things in their living context. And now we have a responsibility to ensure that we stop the bleeding of the business, we focus, we maximize impact, and the only way to maximize impact is to interrogate the existence of each of the structures. Now, is it wise to choose a board whose life you can not guarantee when it will change or it will last? Especially within the fact that in the current financial year, we are working to try and push in preparation for the next financial year. We really under pressure cooker here to realize the realignment of our entities together with the new department. So that come the next, we have mandate to do this work, kind of have a direction by December. I mean, Minister was showing the time frame here yesterday. Now, if we truly 2 months next week, we start processes of filling in boards and when are we going to finalize this primary task at hand? And I'm saying here, much as we are dealing with the annual report and which is the past, and we are in the current, we don't suspend government work in the process, but we also need to be sensitive to the time lines within which we must finish some of the project, of the programs. Secondly, I would want to bring to the fore the issue of people who jump ship, because I think it's a very important issue for the committees of Parliament. It's a government-wide problem, which requires us to look at the lacuna in legislation, because currently when you have authority over an employee for as long as that employee is in your employ, I hear the part that says, well, if he or she jumps ship, follow the criminal procedure route. It is not always, that also is not in your control. You simply go and open a case. If it is followed, you are lucky. 9 out of 10 times it's not followed, because that person is no longer under your control. And the law says you only blacklist this person to be employed in the public sector after you have found the person guilty. Now, that's the lacuna I am then saying we probably as legislators must look into that lacuna, because people, once they realize that, yes, I have no escape route here, even after you have gone through the processes of discipline, if the chairperson of that disciplinary committee had not yet tabled and handed over to the accused person the judgment, that person jumps ship once he or she realizes I'm in a tight spot, and seeks employment in the next department. And the next department cannot not hire that person, because that person has not been found guilty, because that judgment was not yet handed over. And I'm saying these are areas which, as legislators, you must help us deal. I know that I've raised that issue elsewhere, but I think that when it is also raised here, as part of our, what probably there may be some focus. The third area I want to comment on, Chairperson, it is worrisome that, you know, this issue of judgment handling, for me, it's not an issue of mistake or anything. 9 out of 10 times it's not by default, truly. It's not by default. It's not by default. But it also talks to how are you going to follow up on the issues of corruption if you are not ready. Becomes difficult. So I'm saying some of the considerations we must really, but I was happy when I heard the CFO saying, talking about automation, because then at least that one is safer. At least it took the stress away from me. But I don't want us to look at the issue of record judgment, record management as an issue of default or capacity or whatever. For me, it's by design. Until somebody proves me wrong. The last one. ITT is old. I think it has been explained a bit that it's not old. In essence, we have dealt with this in our meeting where the DG was present, and it transpired that the breakdown of that amount, it's more provincial departments than ourselves. So that's why DG then said he would write to the various departments as well as the province. as long as we understand that if we owe them, they were to sort the very small, very minimal amount, I can't even recall how much it was, they were to sort it between themselves as accounting officers. So from our side, that gives us this attention at the most near level. But I do want us to look and the committee to assist us, because truly the entities in the department have some level of duplication. In fact, at some point I made a rough, just then talk to Abu browse through each one's mandate, and I could lift up similarities in terms of what the mandate is and what they are doing. And we need to tease those out, ensure that we channel resources to where they will make maximum impact. Thank you, Chair.
The and the team of IDC, let's appreciate the responses. It's shining some light. I think all of us were shocked to hear that the department is always with equity. So at least if it's not you here, but still wrong, even with those commercial departments. But now we are, those that were here yesterday, we had to rush out the time because at the time that was allocated to us was 5 o'clock. Today it's 4 o'clock. So by 4 we have to be out of the train. Otherwise there will be additions or whatever. So we are then appealing to you. We want everything, but please mind the time agreement. Or else we'll have to finish up in Parliament and look for a venue there, if it is possible to look for a venue there and finish up there. I am then handing over to Clement. Are you also going to find something next? So, okay, you can come to the side then.
Chairperson of IDC South Africa. with me, my team members, with the CEO, which is the first presentation, and the CFO in front there. We are not going to go into too much detail in terms of the first couple of slides. The reason was we tried to put that just to refresh your mind about who we are as Agroma. And just for the benefit of those who were probably not there during the induction process when we introduced ourselves as Agroma. And so I'll just quickly have a few minutes just to highlight what it is that is Agroma, but we'll then get on into the actual performance of 2018-19 annual report, if you may allow me. So what did they do? They set up Chairperson, honorable members. I'm going to just summarize slide 1 to slide number 8, slide number 9, and then see what they take over from slide number 10. So just a quick recap, one is the recap of who is Agroma. I did mention in the target series that Agroma is a certification point. So we are certifiers of non-standardized construction products. So what we are there for is actually to test, evaluate, and certify any non-standardized construction product. So everything that way there is no FDA standard, that is where the belongs to. So in terms of our history, we established that in 1969, and only a few days ago we celebrated our anniversary for 50 years, 2019. Right? So we've been in business now for 50 years, although during those 48 of those years we were a technical agency reporting to the Department of Public Works, but we are now a legislative body, it's now in the act of Parliament, which is done with Agroma. And our mandate is now just going beyond a certifying only building products, but we are also there to now promote the usage of those building products. So what we are now, our mandate, what we now do is also assurance to specifiers that the products that are being used are fit for purpose, and we also need to actually promote the process of integrated social development and socio-economic development. Now that we are also looking at the social acceptability issues of those products, and ensure then that we do promote the introduction of these products into the market. And last but not least, is actually minimizing the risk of using these products. So should any developer or any government agent who decide to use any of these products, we need to actually ensure that we do assist the minimization of this product. So, honorable members, I don't want to communicate you too much details, but that is actually who we are. We talk only non-standardized innovative building, innovative construction products. And the construction products, they could be building products, they could be paintwork, they could be roads, they could be bridges, anything in the construction industry that is non-standardized. With those few words, may I hand over to the CFO to take us through from slide number 10, and that is with the core chief of the annual report. If you have a light.
Thank you, Chair. We. We're struggling to project here, but I can just talk to the slide. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. This slide, we're reflecting the organization in terms of the function, starting from the executive authority, reflecting the accounting authority, and the accounting officer. And the accounting officer is supported by the four arms, which are for the CFO's office, the executive manager, technical services, which is our core, as well as the executive manager, corporate services. And highlighted in orange there is our chief audit executive that is representing for audit, risk, and compliance. Each executive is supported by individual staff members in each of those subsections. That this is the interim organizational structure that is still in the making. We currently looking at the organizational design that will assist the organization to implement its mandate. The next slide, looking at the financial management. In financial management, we're looking at how much of the percentage of the regular expenditure against the approved expenditure, where we're reflecting if there is a deviation in the current year. We're looking at the financial year 2018-2019, and there was a deviation of 9%, where it as a result of non-compliance. And the members will recall if you engaged with the AG yesterday, they would have highlighted in terms of where we were found wanting in as far as the compliance is concerned. So this is as a result of those non-compliance which we are currently working on. We have put together our audit action plan that seeks to address these shortcomings. The second one, Chair, is looking at the 30-day period. This is a well-known issue around the country, and we're working hard to make sure that we address this issue. In this, we're looking at all the invoices that were paid within the 30 days and those that are outside, and they will provide reasons if there are any issues. In this case, we were found wanting in terms of the 5% of all the payments that have been made that were outside the 30 days. Our aim, Chair, is to get a clean audit. However, in the current year, we got an unqualified audit opinion, however, with matter of emphasis. In this case, we found having 21 audit issues that have been raised by the AG, and we're currently working on. As we speak, for our second quarter, we've implemented 6 of those 21 that is actually closed. The ones that were not implemented as yet, it's ongoing. So these are the methods that we continue to monitor so that we can close them before the start of the next year or before the end of the year. For corporate services, we put together the policies and procedures which where there was no variations in terms of the implementation, and we conducted the salary benchmarking to put in line with other organizations in terms of the remuneration that is paid to the AGRIMA staff, and we implemented all the KPIs. There was no deviations in this regard. For information and communication technology, there was a deviation of 20% in developing the ICT governance structure, and the 20% was mainly that the draft of the policy has been drafted but hasn't been approved yet. In our core mandate, which is technical assessment, is divided into 3 parts: technical assessment, product or service assistance, support certifications. When we look at the technical assessment, we have implemented our the applications for non-standardized construction products, and we meet all the requirements. There was no deviations on this, and also the technical assessment with the meeting requirements granted within the required timelines. Also on this issue, there's no deviation. However, on the product and systems approved, and there was a deviation of 25%. The deviation is as a result that 27 out of 36 products and systems assessed were and approved within the timeline, and but
due to the certification process that being not being finalized and approved within the time period, as the difference of the 9 certification. With regard to product systems and board certifications, we had a 4% deviation from our plan of 100%, but only achieved 96%. In this, is that 27 out of 28 certificates approved by the technical committee, only one was not approved when it was submitted to the board. In terms of the quality assurance, the percentage of inspection conducted, there was a deviation over performance or over achievements of 20% due to all of the fact that all the submitted, all products submitted for approval were for quality inspections were completed. And in as far as the percentage of the quality inspections or certificate post certification, 85% was achieved against the planned 80%. The 5% over achievement is due to the additional quality inspections that were undertaken. In terms of the inspections of the certificate holder licensees, we achieved 100% as per plan. When we look at the performance of the Office of the CEO in terms of the achievements of the KPIs in the three sections, and in the first one, in the financial management, there was no deviation, all were achieved. And the implementation of corporate services, also there was no deviation. There's only one deviation under technical services, which was not achieved as per plan. Chair, we look at the budget versus the actual amount comparison. This is the approved budget against the actual. And here, in as far as the employee-related cost, we planned to spend 19.5 million and they only spent 15, resulting in 4 million or 4.4 million of unspent amount due to the posts that were not filled during the period under review. And the other administration fees is the transfer of function as of the end of 2018 financial year. It was not continuous, so we didn't incur. And depreciation and amortization, Chair, we plan to apply depreciation that will amount to 640, but we find ourselves in terms of actual at 3.6 million. This is due to the transfer that happened from CSIR to Agrima, and the furniture and office equipment and all other fixed assets that were transferred, resulting in this depreciation and the resulted deemed assets, because somewhere didn't have values and we have to apply values on those assets, hence we have these differences. But when we look to the previous period, same time, there was less depreciation in actual fixed assets as compared to the plan. The lease on rental, that is the premises that we're currently using, we spent less than what we planned, which is the difference is just under 300,000. And in the previous year, it was almost 50%. Chair, the debt impairment here results from the invoices that we issue to our customers. We normally request them to pay in advance. That we issue around beginning of April, expecting them to pay in April. And at the end of the period, we realize that the customers amounting to 300,000. Didn't pay and we had to impair it. This is the process of saying we don't believe that these people will pay in the next 12 months and then we provide that. In the process now, 6 months down the line, few of those ones that were impaired are starting to pay because it's conditional upon our annual fees that customers shall pay on each year of the annual fee. So we see some are coming up to pay those outstanding amounts. And in as far as the operational expenses, we spent almost 9 million compared to the 11 million, resulting in 2 million of underspending. Looking at the previous year, the whole 12 million was underspent. So the total expense, we're reflecting the total expense there in terms of what was planned against the actual expenses, the same as the previous year, which reflects around 3 million being a surplus, and as well as the 13 million in the previous financial year. Here we also looked at the budgeted revenue versus the actual collection, and in as far as the grant is concerned, 100% has been paid as planned. And in as far as the assessments, these are the fees that we conduct, we realize through doing a process to do the assessments to make sure that a particular client have to go through these assessments until they qualify for the certificate. And this is what we have realized from our plan. We planned for 2.4, but we realized 2.6. And the same in the previous year, we budgeted for 4, but we only get half of that. And the interest received is the money surplus funds that are not required immediately. We put with our bank, and it generates this interest. And this is how we actually performed much better than the plan in the current year, and previously the same, that was the case. And in this, I'll hand it over, Chair, to Mark CEO.
Thank you very much, CFO. Honorable Deputy Minister of the Department of Public Works, Honorable Chair of the Committee, Portfolio Committee on Public Works and Infrastructure, Honorable Members of Parliament, Chairperson, colleagues, parliamentary staff, and DPW staff, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to present to Parliament. AGRIMA takes this presentation as very important when we present on our previous year in terms of good governance, and we appreciate the presence of the Deputy Minister. Thank you very much. So, as has been mentioned by the Chairperson and the CFO, I will touch on board governance. Ladies and gentlemen, in the year under review last year, we had 5 board members and we had 4 new board members were appointed, and currently we do have 9 board members, therefore we do comply with the legislation to require a minimum of 7 board members. So ladies and gentlemen, honourable members, these board members do oversight on the entity AGRIMA South Africa, and we appreciate the work that they do. We do have 4 subcommittees of the board, which look at issues of audit and risk, human resources, technical, which is important, and industry advisory subcommittee. They look at issues of strategic planning, and we'll be having our last strategic planning session with the board next week, Wednesday. And we believe that the board does its oversight to ensure that you're well managed and ensure that you do what you're required to do in terms of legislation. The board members have a number of meetings in a year, and the audit and risk had 3 ordinary meetings, 6 special meetings, and their 4 sub-members who are permanent members of the board. I'm an ex-official member of all the subcommittees. The human resources had 3 meetings which were planned during the year, the technical committee 4, as well as the board having 4 ordinary meetings and 5 special meetings. On the next slide, ladies and gentlemen, is a remuneration which, in terms of other boards, are very moderate, or should I say, comparatively. And those are the fees that were paid out to the board members. Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, in terms of human resources, I've listed there on this particular slide the amount that we're paid. We do have a very small staff complement of 28 staff members. Full staff complement is slightly more than that. We are currently undergoing an OD exercise. And we take the issues that were mentioned by the Deputy Minister very, very seriously, the issues of convergence, and we look forward to whatever recommendation. And we will comply and advise and cooperate with whatever recommendation. Because we believe it's not about us as individuals, but what is good for the country going forward. I'd like to just highlight that AGRIMA has 80% of its executives being female. And I think it's one of the entities which has that particular. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And 54% of the staff complement are actually female as well. So, and for a technical organization, that I think is better as well. Thank you very much. Performance rewards similar to IDT, now performance rewards were awarded last year as we are just busy setting up current transition from the CSR to to a standalone. So there were no staff performance awards or bonuses paid out last year. I touched on this, of 54% of the staff complement being female, of which 19 are professionally qualified, in other words, technical staff members. Senior management make up 5, and top management 1, and the total staff complement, as I mentioned previously, 28. Skilled as a support staff, of whom we have 3. So you can see it's a highly technical entity that we do have. Ladies and gentlemen, in terms of the output, in terms of what we do, as the chairperson stated in his opening remark, we are there to assess his products, and these are the outputs that we did certificate last year, and they are listed there, and then we did certificate 27 certificates, of which hit up a wide range of products. We have road construction products, we have brick deck joints, we have paint coating. It's a whole wide range of different projects that we believe contribute to moving the country forward, because these new products perform better than convention. The reason why people come to us for assessment is because there's no national standard for that product. And the only way one can use them in construction is by them getting approval by an independent technical assessment agency, of whom Adriwa is. So once you give them an independent assessment, and while you are conducting your oversight visit, you did visit our facility at the CSIR in Pretoria, as well as the Eric Mulobi Innovation Hub in Shoshanguve, where you did see yourself firsthand the actual buildings which were built years ago. I think it's 10 years ago, if I'm not wrong, yeah. And those buildings are still standing, and that's a testament to the outputs of Agrima certificate certification. And I'll just touch on one or two of the certificates. We have the Mach Asphalt High Modulus Asphalt Certificate, number 16 on the list. It's an interim certificate. Why an interim certificate? For those products, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, we do award an interim certificate because after we test it in the lab, we go and do a 3-year field test where they actually build a road and we see how this thing actually performs on the road and compare it to the field, the lab test that we did in the lab. Because remember, in the lab you're testing under ideal conditions. In the field where it's implemented, it's tested under actual conditions, and those two conditions may be different. So we do award an interim certificate. We have toilet systems, you saw some of this, the Rockler one, I was very impressed with it actually. We also do energy assessment software, roofing tiles made out of waste plastic. You know, it's a whole range of products which have tremendous benefits for the country. So in summarizing, I'll just say that Agrima will continue to play this important role, and we appreciate presenting to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee. Honorable Chair, we thank you for the opportunity to present to Parliament and look forward to further engagement. Thank you very much.
I think that's also appreciated, the fact that you, within the time frame, to present us within the time frame. I'm then inviting comments, questions, clarities from honorable members, honorable senator, honorable Kopane, honorable Tring, honorable Shabalala. Before you speak, I think let's release the DM. She's saying that she will be back, but she has to just a few smaller things that she has to sort out. We'll release you, DM. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Chair. I'm still getting a grasp as to what the mandate of Agrima is, and maybe one day I'll get it right. But I would love to say thank you to the presentation. I think, Chair, it's only proper if I say this, of all the entities, the presentation of Agrima SA is always short and on point, and and it's like the board members understand what they are supposed to do. But my question will be based on, of all the products that Agrima SA have tested, how many are actually being used by the middle class society in South Africa? Because I think we are the first people that need to benefit from this. So I've got only one question. Of all the products that have been tested, how many are actually being used by other departments, preferably to accommodate the middle class people? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, mine is, let me start by where my colleagues have ended up. I just want to find out what is the working relationship with Agrima and other entities within the Department of Public Works. Because the previous presentation, IDT, on their annual report, they mentioned all the entities, but they said they've never even worked with one of them, though they could see the similarities. So I started to question whether I'm also working together with other entities within the Department of Public Works. Chair, my other concern is, according to the AG yesterday, they still provide contracts. The contracts and quotations were awarded to bidders that did not score the highest points in the evaluation process. And what are you doing to rectify the situation? Because that's what the AG was concerned about. The other thing, Chair, according to the annual report on page 33, with regard to the numbers of board members, I didn't hear the clarity. According to the presentation, they are 9, but when I counted them, they are 7. Maybe you can explain what is the difference between the two. And my worry again, there is this delay admin runner. I don't see anything regarding her for this financial year 2018-2019. She was not remunerated as other people were getting some benefits as board members. What happened to her? Is she still there? Is she still not? What is the date? If maybe you can clarify. My last concern, Chair, is with regard to the remuneration of board members, non-executive. If you check 2017-2018 financial year, at the bottom, I don't know, is it 7,941? That is the total grant of what was given. But if you check 2018-2019, it jumped from 7,900 to 110. If I can maybe get the clarity, why such a big gap? Okay, I think I'll stop here, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think one needs to appreciate the presentation by Agrima and also indicate that as we move forward, can we put our heads together or even a strategy as we move forward? Can you? I'm not sure, but I've read this thing of. The community out there, even the department didn't have a job. They hardly know about the government. If you could respect them in the strategy, but also it talks to your, I think you have an individual that is running the competition. Communication and marketing. We don't have a unit of communication, but we still lack the outreach and the footprint out there in the community. Having seen your side, that would be the best thing for even the poor. The poor capital, they look at at the building, the local building, but I think it will have a difference when you challenge the young people to know that there is another world which is far ahead of South Africa. The other countries are using alternative products, and South Africa still hold on to what it is to be. But when you go to your side, you see the other side that exists in South Africa. I'm just wondering if the school, your MPC for human settlement, our problems is they are public work for so they go together. How much do they know? But with CBC, I think there is also the similarity in terms of how do you challenge the kids towards the built environment at a younger age, rather than buying them toys based on saying anything about their future, your partnership thereof. I think for me that would be something that one needs to. Once you give it in the system, can you see transformation? Can you see you being in contact, have an impact in our society? Thank you.
Another question?
Thank you, Chair. Just two, maybe three questions. The Auditor General in our presentation given to us yesterday indicated that there were some of the top non-compliance areas and AGRIMA falls within the category of non-compliance in these two areas given to us by the Auditor General. The one was financial statements submitted for audit were materially misstated, number one. Number two, effective and appropriate steps were not taken to prevent irregular expenditure. So if we could have some feedback from the board in terms of what is being done to ensure that when we sit with them again, we are not going to find that there is non-compliance in this particular area. And then, Chair, I have the good fortune of sitting also in the Department of Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee. Challenges we're picking up with SABS and NRCS in particular. So my question is, has there been any dovetailing, working together with SABS and NRCS on matters of compatibility, areas of knowledge sharing, and has AGRIMA actually taken away some work from SABS and NRCS? Thank you, Chair.
Over to you, Chairperson and CEO and the team. Can you pass the mic, please?
Oh.
Thank you, honourable members. I'll probably try and answer a number of questions that have been highlighted today. Over to you and CFO to deal with some of the issues. I think the honourable member, the issue of the mandate, probably at some point our again go through the mandate in much more detail, but again, in summary, our role is, and I'll probably try and answer to it in regards to the last question as well that you have mentioned. Our role is to certify non-standardized construction products. And there was a particular slide there which I would go through, which showed the role of SABS, CSIR, and AGRIMA South Africa. Right? Now, SABS, their role is to actually develop standards. Right? Standards of those materials where they know the material behavior. So this is what is normally referred to as the conventional building material. So you actually know the performance of those materials. So you get, they end up now developing a standard pertaining to that code before that. So if you're going to be talking of a brick, you know the behavior of the brick, so they write a standard for that behavior of that brick. Whereas now, Agroma now says, it's used with a material that you don't even know the behavior of that. So it could be a new brick, which is actually made up of materials that you don't know the behavior of. Those particular materials making up new brick. So it could be the new polystyrene, and you don't know how it behaves under different environmental conditions, under fire or whatever. Then you have to develop a new performance criteria to meet the national food directive requirements. So there's quite a separation of functions between the FABS and the agroma. FABS in the conventional standardized agroma in the non-conventional clothing material product. But for sure, because in any case, the principle of specifying or looking at that is similar, so there is a need for actually doing that knowledge sharing. In some of the cases, some products might go to FABS to their test lab, and they can get some tests to be done in the FABS and recognize that. So there's that synergy also of recognition of certain tests done by FABS, and they bring them to Agroma and specify them. So that is actually. I don't know. But what you're asking, I think it is the need for us to try and get an answer who actually utilizes the innovative coding products. But they tell you that in the space of human settlement, in the space of some of the social infrastructure things, hospitals, schools, etc., there is a considerable uptake of those products, but we will quantify how many there's probably a need for us to be able to do so. But for now, today, I can tell you how many of them are. I've been fortunate to have worked previously in the human settlement space, and we've utilized a lot of innovative products in that space, even in the Cape Town. There's quite a number of products that have been used in this space. But I think we're taking it as a challenge, trying to start quantifying or to what extent are we actually using these innovative products being adopted by the industry. Partnerships with other entities, definitely we do have partnerships with other entities outside of our network. Right. So in the human settlement space, we have a partnership, we're working closely with the NSBRC and the other entities outside that. With the IDT, we have not actually had any formal partnership, until the Deputy Minister now, when she started to put these issues of this, can we look into any collaboration, any partnership within our own state of public works? We started with it. I was now engaged with the IDT and said, are you with a number of projects that you're utilizing? Although you do not have direct control, because they are also given that they are clients. So the client, their client may not want to utilize innovation to the technology. I said, there is an opportunity for us to work together and try to promote innovative products with AID. So we also welcome your input. The issues around irregular expenditures and contracts, I think I'll give it to the CFO. Number of board members, and focusing more on Madam Adelaide. Number of board members, I think they were five in the last financial year. I think the CEO of the MSB has clarified that the nine are in now of this financial year. So the last financial year, we did not have adequate for number of board members. And Madam Adelaide actually resigned in that last financial year. So we then put that to Department of Public Works. And we have financial aid, they ended on the three or four more members in the current financial aid taking this tonight. So from a reporting point of view, we probably be talking of 2018-19 years back, but in this kind of financial aid, they are not putting the time for the issue around the marketing and strategy communication, I think we're just noting that your influence, we just what
that so that the next time we meet, we'll be able to tell you what we have said and how it plays out with that issue. So maybe the issues around the finances directly at least that we have over to be there for him.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. And with regard to contracts and quotations that were which attained loans for but awarded the contract or the tender, this has been highlighted by Auditor General as a non-compliant indeed non-compliant supply chain regulations and instructions and so on. The process that we're currently working on since I came on board, I had to have a staff workshop because I've realized that even this was cited by the Auditor General that the general lack of control environment, and in that it reflects in terms of the internal control how they are set up. And I had a staff workshop to make sure that we will educate everyone in terms of what is expected in terms of the system of supply chain, and then we can deal with money part of our policy action plan in terms of improving compliance with the system of the supply chain as well as the regulation of federal regulation. So we're working on that, and we shall be going to improve in environment compliance concerns in that plan. The second one that was highlighted is the issue of non-compliance with regards to accounting standards. And when we submit our annual financial statements, that there were errors that we have to be corrected when we submit to the Auditor General for audition. And that also we're going to improve. As we indicated in our organizational structure, is that currently the finance department is only manned by one person and myself being the second. So it's something that in terms of improving the internal controls and the quality of our reporting, looking at putting the middle in the middle cutter. I also noted that looking at the IDG, they're also looking at the middle cutter just to improve the quality of reporting and the quality of information. Something that we're going to prioritize so that whenever we prepare this annual financial statement, it should be ready for voting without any changes or misstatements as reported. In terms of the effective steps not taken to prevent irregular expenditure. Currently, we are monitoring that, and in our audit action plan, we indicated that in as far as the compliance method is concerned, it's a continuous one. It's in the sense that we continue this on a monthly basis, and we shall report in terms of how many transactions that have actually been considered irregular. But the most important thing is that we must be preventing that irregular expenditure from the business. So we'll start to keep track in terms of how it can be prevented. And the members also raised the issue of the fact that in the previous financial year, that is 2017, 2018, and 2018, 2019. First, this is the chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee. He's an external member. He participates or whoever is invited at the board meeting. He's not the board member. So first, when he was appointed, he only attended a few meetings in the previous year. But in this current year that is under consideration, there were many meetings in trying to address some of the issues that have been raised by the Auditor General. And you see such a jump of almost more than 100% in terms of the engagement that was happening to make sure that our annual financial statements are issued without error. I was appointed in February of last year, and we want to be in 2020. We covered everything. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think just to reiterate the fact that during the financial year 2018-19, that was when we migrated from CSIR. To the new NDC, and knowing then that our policies were actually based on a Schedule 3, for CSIR, Schedule 3C, and we are Schedule 3A. So during that whole transition, there were a lot of many
Jonathan and the team. We always appreciate Agrimaiti as one of the entities that is performing so well within the department. But I think what Honorable Usuluza has said, and she continues to say, is that with really, Michael and Zuba, you were saying that there are some of the products that you have certified. We would like to see in the future Agrima as a certifying product, maybe for the Department of Human Settlement, and also knowing that within Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, you have your IDT, you have your CDE, especially the built environment. In future, we would like to see where Agrima SA is recommending products to be used by IDT. Not just certifying only. We appreciate what you are doing, but we want to see more of the products that you have certified being used by the department. That one, I think, would be a serious achievement. Not just certifying maybe for private people, for private companies to use it, but then a department will then say, if you have to build this housing, you have to use this product that has been certified by Agrima. That's what we'd like to see in the future, especially in this administration. Not that far. but we appreciate and we like that you are performing so well and you are consistent in maintaining good and positive audit outcomes. A lot of members, I think for today we are true and we appreciate IDT. The CEO gone because the session tried. No, the chairperson, the CEO is here, and Agrima SA. Which one was going to invite us in the celebration? Was it that Agrima? And then we are told today that the celebration has passed. I know, but what to give the CD tomorrow, but Agrima. I mean, a 50th birthday is not a small thing. So we're supposed to have been invited.
I'm sure I just said that you can get the